And our next speaker is Ursula Geza, who is the head of the strongly correlated systems land rent research group in Vigner. And he will present his latest results here.
So first, I'd like to thank the organizers for the opportunity to be here and for the kind invitation. And in the next 20 minutes, as I thought that it should be for this time limit, I think I tried to give you a little introduction about what we are working on, some recent results. And we are at the border edge of applied mathematics and solid state physics, quantum chemistry, but I tried to omit formulas. So most of the things, I will try to show you different cartoons and just to go over the major things without getting into details of the different formulas. But since this is a workshop on celebration of Eugene Wigner, I also wanted to connect the talk to Wigner. So there is the title originally, which was this novel approaches in material science and ab initio quantum chemistry. We hybrid CPU, GPU based HPC architectures. And by these tensor network state methods. But as a kind of title, I could also say something like boosting effective performance via Wigner-Eckhart theorem. So I just like to show you that how we can boost the HPC performance via non-abelian symmetries, which is connected to work of Eugene Wigner. Okay, so let's see that what is the motivation. So when we have electrons, the electrons start to interact with each other. And as we cool down the sample, these electron interactions gets more and more pronounced. So we see new exotic phases, quantum phases in materials. This means that the materials will have completely different behaviors as what we see at room temperature. And one known example is the high TC superconductivity, which is here. And of course, in the past 40, 50 years, there is so much work has been spent on this problem. But we still don't know what is the underlying mechanism. So it's still under a very intense research. And there are papers every year. Even in this summer, there was this big noise about some articles that, oh, there is high TC in room temperatures. And then, of course, the full scientific community just jumped on it. And in the summer, there were millions of papers on archive and finally confirming that the measured effect is not a high TC or not related to that. So it's more like this levitation that they found is related to this some kind of magnetic properties. And there are already many measurements which claims and prove that the original claims were not correct. But anyway, it's a very good example of what happened in this summer, that everyone is very eager to find these things and just can jump on it immediately. Okay, the other thing is that, of course, in we can also make some very small objects like single molecular magnets, where there is this magnetic properties even in the molecular regime. The other thing is, for example, that I chose to show you is this so-called FEMOCO. This is this nitrogen fixation procedure that this is the only thing in nature which can grab the N2 and convert it to ammonia. And since the whole human society is relying on ammonia, this is so crucial that there is this very complicated chemical structure, and just there is one bond which is able to capture the nitrogen and convert it to ammonia. If we could understand how this is done in nature, we could use this for chemical reactions and maybe to boost and increase the way that how we produce ammonia artificially. And maybe this is going to be something in the future that taking advantage of all this knowledge that we get out from these systems. And of course, we are all aware of all this battery technology and so on that is related to these different materials. The other things is the strongly correlated system is that when we have atoms and then we cool them down and put it into some potentials, like in these laser beams, we can form these artificial lasers, like artificial lattices. And this can be, of course, simulated also with these computations where we have this lattice where electrons can jump from one lattice side to the other, which is jumping from one atom to the other with some hopping parameter T. And there is some cost that you pay if two electrons are staying in the same site. And that's written usually by this Hamiltonian that we call the Hubbard model. Okay, that the problem is that this is a very complicated system, and then what to use, classical computer or a quantum computer. And in this talk, I will focus on the classical simulation. So classical simulation of quantum systems. And we had already talks on the quantum simulations. Okay, what is the major problem? The major problem is that We want to do a simulation of quantum systems on classical computers. And the problem is that the computational complexity, which is called the course of dimensionality, that scales exponentially the system size. So it's a super difficult problem. Up to, let's say, 18 electrons or 18 atoms and so on, we are basically stuck and we cannot go any further with full exact diagonalization procedures. Now, the solution for this problem, we are searching for algorithms to reduce the exponential scaling by some controlled approximations. And hopefully we can get up some new method where we can reduce the exponential scaling to some polynomial scaling. That's one thing. The other advantage is that nowadays, if we can find an algorithm which can take advantage of the HPC, this high performance computing, so all the technical developments that are around us and migrate these two things into a single algorithm, then we can have a very efficient method that is fully scalable. And what I'd like to present you, which is so-called this tensor network state methods, or other ways called also density matrix normalization group method, as a shorthand TNS or DMRG up here. Without going into too much detail, we describe this kind of system, this Hamiltonian, with something which includes one particle interactions and two particle interactions. And there are some indices like IJKL, which labels the atomic positions or labels, for example, electronic molecular orbitals in case of a chemical system. So just choosing the given basis, this single Hamiltonian can be used in condensed matter physics, can be used in quantum chemistry. We can have also the relativistic version so that we can have spin-order decomposition, that we have the full solution of the Dirac equation. So it's a four component. We can have also the proton and neutron orbitals. So these C and this annihilation operators can label proton and neutron orbitals. Then we have the nuclear structure version of the code. So we can also study the properties of nuclear shell models. We can go to something like in confined potentials. Then of course, we go to the Hermite polynomial. So it's a full range of physics that can be fully covered with this Hamiltonian. And if we need three particle interactions, of course, it is possible to add that one. Okay, so the major aim is that we want to get the eigenstate of some desired Hamiltonian, and that's what is the major thing, and calculate different expectation value, these different measurements, and express and get this data and compare them to experimental results. Okay, so again, not to go into too much detail, but if you have a quantum system and then you have a wave function which has some components like eight nodes, that means let's have eight spins. This is a tensor which writes down the wave function, and it has just as many legs as many components we have. And that's the dimension of this, of course, blows up exponentially so that we need some other solution. Now, any high order of tensor can be factorized as a product of lower order tensors. So the simplest one is that we break up this big tensor as a multiple of smaller tensors with lower rank tensors or lower order tensors, and these are just matrices. And so in this kind of approximation, there is a label like M1, M2, M3. These label these matrix sizes. If you don't make any truncation, we just simply converted this big tensor to a product of lower order tensors, but we didn't do anything. If we truncate these dimensions, the ranks, these M1, M2, then we get a kind of approximation. And this algorithm allows us to get the optimized form of this tensor representation of the wave function. Okay, so that's nice. We have a nice algorithm that scales polynomially, and we have to encode our quantum system. And here I just show you some example that, for example, in quantum chemistry, where you have the field orbitals, and of course there is this valence space, and then we allow electrons from the occupied to non-occupied basis with all the different configurations, and we would like to calculate, for example, the ground state energy. Now, the problem is that, again, this would scale exponentially, but with some tricks, we can go further. So we don't treat all the orbitals, all the components on the same level, and different approximations on the different energy scales can be introduced just by, again, making some truncation in this so-called Hilbert space. And without going into too much detail, we have an algorithm where we split up this full Hilbert space into different components using different approximations at different level. And just to show you, there are conventional methods in quantum chemistry, which is so-called this coupled cluster methods and so on, which is the so-called gold standard methods. And our methods now has the potential to get exactly the same results or even better for the same computational cost. And our method is fully scalable now. And also very general that it is not related to any kind of approximation, that the correlation must be weak or strong, but it's a fully general version. Okay, how could this be that it is so accurate? There must be, of course, a mathematical reason for this behind. And without going into too much detail, what I'd like to tell you that it is very important that when we are developing methods, there are a lot of heuristic methods, but it's always good to have something which can be really analyzed in rigorous mathematical terms. And that's exactly what we are working on. And I will not give you the derivation or anything like that, but just to mention you that when we use different approximation, different levels, and we can do this in a rigorous mathematical way, we can write on scaling equations. And once we have scaling equations, we can write on error estimates, error terms, convergence criteria, all these things. And for this problem, for these models, for this algorithm, this is fully possible. And even it is possible to write down this kind of scaling approximations that how to approximate and scale from smaller components the full system. Okay, so that we just take some subsets of orbitals. We do these calculations, we measure some kind of error quantities, and from this we can make a scaling and extrapolate to the full system. And here I chose this FEMOCO, this molecular cluster that I mentioned at the beginning. And this is a huge Hilbert space. It has 54 electrons distributed on 54 orbitals. This is a very large huge space. And there are many papers in the literature obtained by different methods. And in these papers, people use 10 to the 4 many cores. It's very huge calculations on supercomputers with 10 to the 4 many cores, and they obtain these energies. And this is our method with the extrapolations. You can see that we get a very perfect linear line on a double logarithmic scale. And after the extrapolation, this energy that is here or here, that's exactly that was obtained by these other works. But we did our calculations on a single node. Okay, so not supercomputers, but this is just a single node. And if now I will show you how to take it to HPC, to this high performance supercomputing through this GPU, CPU accelerations, then this can be done within one day. So instead of running HPC calculations for several days on these 10 to the 4 many cores, we can do this on a single node with this HPC. Okay, so this is the mathematical aspects, and now comes the computational aspects. So the idea is that we can simply rely on many libraries developed for parallelization, which is called this MPI, there is OpenMP, MKL, and so on. And here I just show you that what is the scaling for these standard libraries if you use as a function of this is this matrix size. And here you can see the red one, this is our one. So we developed a completely new mathematical model for parallelization that is also fully scalable. And here you can see that it gets the full potential, the full power of a single node, which should be 2.5 teraflops. And so that this is be reached completely and then in a very fast way. And for larger systems like this FEMOCO, where we have 113 electrons on 76 orbitals, the size of the Hilbert space is 2.88 times 10 to the 36. So this is enormous Hilbert space. And still we get this performance out so that we can get out the full performance of a single node. And if you use GPUs, here we show that how the performance increases as we go for 2 cards, 4 cards, 6 cards, and 8 cards. And then this dashed line here shows you the theoretical performance, the maximum value, which is so-called the FP64 from NVIDIA. So we almost reach this limit. And that gives you the idea that this is very good. Now, here comes the contribution from Eugene Wigner, is that there is the Wigner-Eckardt theorem, okay? So everything was here that in quantum systems, you have quantum numbers. So you can rewrite the linear algebra in terms of quantum numbers. Everything, all the matrix and tensor libraries decomposes to this so-called quantum number sectors. But you can also take advantage of non-abelian symmetries. But of course, that's a very delicate mathematical framework that is related to the work of Eugene Wigner. And here, I don't want to go into any details, but just I just showed you that in all matrix and tensor library or operations, there is some correction factors. And this W9J, which is expressed in terms of W6Js, these are the code, which is called Wigner 9J and Wigner 6J formulas. Okay, so that all this algebra, if you work it out, you can write down everything in terms of non-abelian symmetries. And this gives us an enormous compression in a way that this blue one, it's strange that it's okay. The blue one is when we have only U1 symmetry, what I have shown you before. And then we have the SU2 version, which is now the red one, a little bit higher performance. And then we again rewrote the whole kernel, and now we have this purple one. And so this reaches this FP64 limit, plus also gets above this. And this means that finally we reach some 110 teraflops, which means that we also managed to utilize this highly specialized tensor core units in this TCU from NVIDIA. So it's not only the floating point 64, but also the TCUs are utilized with this tensor algebra. And for a given SU2 matrix size, if you calculate what would be the corresponding U1, then and rescale this, then we get the performance around 250 to 500 teraflops. So just using SU2 symmetry, we get a factor of 3 to 4 boost in performance. So we are basically using 500 teraflops. This means that if somebody would like to do the same calculations with a U1 symmetry, he would need 500 teraflops to get these data that are shown here by the purple curve. And that's why I call this boosting performance via Wigner-Eckardt theorem, because this is really something that even in performance, you can measure it immediately. Okay, what is amazing is that this algorithm, I already told you, it doesn't scale exponentially, but it's a polynomial scaling where the exponent is d to the cube. And with parallelization, you can see this here where we have the computational time measured as a function of this matrix size. And here you see these nice linear scalings. The exponent is reduced to 0.98. This means the d cube scaling is pushed down to linear scaling. Okay, so it's not only that the mathematical very huge Hilbert space is pushed down already from exponential to polynomial, but even the exponents with HPC can be pushed down from d cube to d1. And that's basically what I wanted to tell you. It's very important to do all these mathematical developments. This is what it's a focus of all these tensor network state methods. But at the same time, we must also utilize all the technical developments around us. That's basically this HPC technology. And so if we are able to combine both with some algorithm which has the features to fulfill both criteria, then we can get these very nice things that first of all, we can get these new algorithms which are variational. We can do these extrapolations to get these extra digits. Or using our methods, now we are combining it with MPI solutions to reach the petascale. And hopefully within a few years, our major aim is to get to the exascale. And so to push all these things to exascale computations, and that would really give us something that we can hopefully get the simulation of realistic material properties for very huge complex quantum systems, not only in chemistry, but condensed matter physics, nuclear structure theory, and so on. And so I thank you again for our support from the different funding agencies and for your attention. Thank you very much.
Now the talk is open for discussion.
Can you comment a little bit more? What is really the assumption underlying so that this scaling, these nice results which you showed on the scaling work? I had the impression that you showed something like an ideal Hamiltonian.
Ideal?
An ideal Hamiltonian, no. in this proof. And do you have to assume that the Hamiltonian which you are exploring in an unknown system is somehow close to that? And how do you measure this closeness?
It's a fully general ab initio Hamiltonian that I have shown here. So usually that's a full ab initio quantum chemical Hamiltonian. There is no assumption of any locality or anything that we do in physics. In physics, we have usually special Hamiltonians with specially constructed structures, local Hamiltonians, rescaled, you know, interactions, just really focusing on the most important physical concepts. These are fully general ab initio Hamiltonian, which I started my talk at the beginning, having the 1 and 2 particle interactions. It's completely general. There is no assumption. There is nothing. The only thing that I took advantage is the SU2 spin invariance, so that I use non-abelian symmetries to boost the performance. But otherwise, everything is.
But I think for nuclear physics, of course, also 3-particle and so on are important, these interactions. Could you include that?
Or yes, we have papers on that. So I also generalized my code a couple of years ago in 2015 for nuclear structure theory. So we have a very intense collaborations with people in Darmstadt that we have the 3-body interactions. And there is this so-called ISMRG, this similarly transformed Hamiltonian, where you can scale out some of the 3-body terms to make it an effective 2-body. And so we have a couple of papers on that. Even now, there is some papers. So that and this method is, at the moment, is the only one that can be used besides the CI approximations, which is used nowadays in nuclear structure theory. So we can go up a factor of 10 or 100 larger systems that people can study now in nuclear physics. And so that's why I said this is amazing, that this is a fully general Hamiltonian, plus you can use all these CPU GPU kernels at the same time. So, and it's not limited to anything like that. Thank you.
Somewhat related question, that is it possible to extend this method to gate theories?
There are papers, as far as I know. There are many extensions. For example, this tensor network state structure is used now in deep learning, machine learning, in gate theory. I mean, there are millions of applications. And luckily, I wrote the code in a way that it's a fully general structure, because we are Wigner Research Institute for Condensed Matter or Solid State Physics. So I was always concentrating on that. But since I'm working with the chemist colleagues for almost 20 years, I generated the code for them. So I was developing everything for all the frameworks. This is why we can use it now in nuclear structure theory, because at the beginning, you can define the structures of your local operator, the Hamiltonian, and you can apply it to any kind of quantum system, quantum optics, there's time evolution to do dynamics, finite temperature, and all these things.
When you showed the comparison, and one of the slides you had the comparison.
Yes.
And what I noticed is that.
This one?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So the first five digits agree with all the other ones. But mm-hmm. then the last ones, 182, 183, doesn't agree with any of the other ones.
Yep.
So how are you sure that your result is correct and not the other guys? Because the other ones all seem to be around 1.7, right?
Yeah. So these are bare energies, this one, 182.17, this. And they also have the extrapolated one. And the extrapolated is also 183. So these are what is called the unextrapolated. This is why I wrote it non-extrapolated ground state energies. Uh-huh. Okay. And of course, I didn't have enough time, but there are also extrapolation techniques based on these methods, and they end up exactly with these numbers. Okay. And of course, this, what I show you, and this is why I didn't show you more digits, because this is what is called chemical accuracy. So usually it's a kilo, 1.6 kilo mole or something like that. I'm not a chemist, so I don't want to say anything stupid, but usually this is what chemists colleagues would like to have, this chemical accuracy. For us, it's usually 3 digits accuracy.
So you, this method relies on controlled assumptions, that this is what you emphasized at the beginning. How much these assumptions rely on the fact that we calculate the ground state or excited state of the system?
Yeah, you can calculate the excited state straightforwardly, because you get the ground state, and by orthogonalization procedure, you get the excited state. So that usually when we do the calculations, you can ask in a single calculations to get the many excited states as well. Of course, you cannot get the full spectrum, because that would be exact organization, but getting the first 10, 20, 30 states is possible. And that's also when you have, for example, bosonic systems, this is what you really need, because of course, then the bosonic degrees of freedom is also not restricted to 2 or 3, but you have to make some 30, 40 modes that you include, you set it up, and then therefore you can get also the excited state as well. And there are millions of applications, but in 20 minutes, of course, I had to just restrict just for a couple of examples to give you some impression.
If there isn't any other question, let's thanks again our speaker.
Thank you very much.